Hola, hola, my name is Ricardo. I am the host of the Lucha Jobbers podcast here in the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. We are a Spanish-speaking show dedicated to discussing and analyzing pro wrestling from all across the world. From AEW to CMLL, we talk about American wrestling, Japanese wrestling, and of course, Lucha Libre. If something big happened in the pro wrestling world, we will talk about it. So if you know Spanish or have a friend that knows Spanish or want to practice your Lucha Libre pronunciations, go listen to the Lucha Jobbers podcast right here in the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. Nos vemos por ahí.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast. I am your host, Jesse Collings. Joining me here today is a special guest, first time guest on the show. It is Mr. Warren Hayes. Warren, how are you doing today?
I'm doing very well. Thank you for having me, Jesse. This is I'm looking forward to today's topic of discussion, and I'm glad you invited me on to talk about it. Thank you so much.
Yeah, Warren, and I want to ask you is, now your Twitter profile is Mr. Warren Hayes.
Yes.
And I want to point out that that's a very successful thing, putting that as your prefix on Twitter, because I think of and refer to you internally as Mr. Warren Hayes at all times.
It rolls off the tongue, doesn't it? Right.
It does. You know, what is kind of the genesis of that?
Okay. Here's the, you're going to get the scoop on this, Jesse. Yeah, I've never told anyone this.
The people want to hear Mr. Warren Hayes' lore. That's really, the topic I asked you about has absolutely nothing to do with the show. This is what the people want to hear.
The topic was bait to get me on the show to spill the beans. No, but I used to dabble in back in the late 90s, back when I was very active on RSPW, on Usenet and all that stuff. I also dabbled in fantasy wrestling, right? And not the type where you draft guys and so on. No, you actually make up your own characters. You actually create your own wrestling personas, and then you write out, and then you join an eFed. Maybe a lot of you right now listening know exactly what I'm talking about, and I'm just preaching to the choir. But you join an eFed, and you have the promoter. There's a promoter of the eFed, and you write up your promos. You type them out, and then the promoter distributes the promos via newsletter or message board forums or whatever, and he'd decide who wins and loses, right? And he'd write up cards and whatnot and move for moves and all that stuff. And my character was Mr. Ratings Warren Hayes. That was my eFed character, and he was kind of a mix between Ric Flair and Mr. Perfect in my mind, as far as personality, heelishness, and athleticism.
What a person to imagine yourself as too, right? Oh, I'm like a cross between Mr. Perfect and Ric Flair. It's not like someone's being a cross between Duke the Dumpster Drosy and Tugboat.
Exactly. I'm not doing Mike Sanders cosplay for the life of me.
So you were Mr. Ratings?
Mr. Ratings.
And you said this was in like the late 90s, early 2000s?
Yeah, something like that. If memory serves me right.
Why were you Mr. Ratings? Because we didn't talk about ratings until AEW existed. Nobody ever talked about ratings. So why that must have confused people.
I was a precursor. I'm a trailblazer, Jesse. What can I tell you? I bring it up in my written promos. I had sources at Nielsen who, gave me all the verbiage so that I could translate it perfectly. No, it was, yeah, that's that, that's what, I'm a pioneer.
Yeah. And so, and that stuck around as you've cultivated yourself as a media figure.
When I started writing, actually, that was the first, I started writing at Daily DDT. I was just like, it felt right, just to throw the Mister in there, sort of like just a very personal callback onto something that no one will ever find, no one will ever make a relation, will ever connect the dots, but there you go. It's a callback to my old eFed character, Mr. Warren Hayes, Mr. Radius Warren Hayes.
I'm sure they exist still, but you never hear about like what you just described, which is kind of like you have the booker and you write your own promos and someone decides who's going over and that kind of thing. And you're kind of participating in this. It's a real fantasy in the sense that we are like almost like fantasy writing our ideas out on paper. Yet,
You know what my finisher was, Jesse? Do you know what my finisher was?
What was it?
It was a top row body splash. You know what the name was? You know what I called it?
The ratings drop.
Oh, fantastic. Give this man a raise.
Did I get it? I said it and I wasn't 100% confident because I was thinking like, no, ratings drop would make sense if you had like some sort of like power bomb like move or some sort of like, you know, lift up and drop someone like move. But
yeah, but you drop I was dropping myself off the top rope. So, you know, it's like okay, there you go. The ratings drop.
Free idea for any aspiring indie wrestler to if they wanted to. I mean, it's not free. You should pay Warren for the idea.
It's out there. You know, Creative Commons 2.0, attribution only. That's all I need. It's fine.
Fast forward like 10 years and just there's some sort of, he's like the next Stone Cold Steve Austin, but he's using your gimmick. The ratings drop is the new Stone Cold Stunner.
Exactly.
So the real reason I wanted to have you on the show was actually not Warren Hayes lore. It was to talk about CM Punk. And my goal with this discussion is I want to have a conversation about CM Punk that's totally different than any other conversation about CM Punk that's happening right now, which is going to be a challenge because everybody is talking about this guy. And I've already had, Trevor Dame on a few weeks ago, and we discussed this very topic about CM Punk. But things have kind of evolved over the last few weeks. And I wanted to kind of focus not as much on like the, oh, CM Punk's coming back to AEW. What do you think, Warren? What do you think about the brand split? And I'm sure we'll touch on that to an extent. But one thing I want to avoid doing is getting like worked up or having these spicy hot takes about something that we have absolutely no idea if it's going to happen or not, which is what I'm trying. I think the brand split's a bad idea just on how I've heard it, but I'm not going to like lose my mind over them doing it because we just know so little about what's going to happen and what potentially is being talked about. But okay. So how do we talk about CM Punk? And what I'm really wanted to focus on here was just this massive shadow that CM Punk has now cast over AEW and over pro wrestling discourse in general, and that people just cannot stop talking about this guy. There's nonstop drama. And when you think about how much drama there has been over like the last few weeks, based on how much stuff has actually happened, which is like CM Punk making an Instagram post and like a couple other small comments here or there. Brandon Cutler tweeted something out. Like, there's really not that much there to really discuss. And yet CM Punk has dominated the news. He's been in the headlines every single day. The entire wrestling news industry seems like it's based around CM Punk speculation. And in fact, I know it is, because let me tell you, when I talked about CM Punk with Trevor Dame on this show, it was our most listened to show we've ever had. And obviously I'm falling into that trap again because, hey, guess what? We're talking about CM Punk again after a few weeks after we already talked about him. But I guess I'll ask you this, Warren, just to start. Why do you think CM Punk and just the figure of CM Punk is so interesting to people when it comes to like wrestling news, and why they can't seem to get enough about CM Punk and information about his potential return?
That's not an easy one to start off with, but you know, in my opinion, I mean, look, to say that he's a lightning rod, I think is, you know, minimizing what he is, because essentially he's the original terminally online pro wrestler, right? He's the guy who would hit the internet in multiple ways and just let stuff leak out, let stuff, you know, just say things that people would latch onto and, you know, try to connect to the idea where that there's heat and so on and so forth. So there's that. you know, there's the position as well that he's created for himself. You know, I like to call it, you know, I think he has a bit of a, or he had a bit of a martyr complex, and I think it worked well for him in WWE. It's not working for him as well in AEW, but that's a whole other thing. But I believe that he's we talk about him a lot because he connects to this very visceral enjoyment that a lot of smart fans have in wanting to get these peeks behind the curtain, right? You know, you talk about it a lot, Jesse, you know, how the scoops business in pro wrestling is very lucrative for those who are very good at it. And there's a reason why it's lucrative. It's people want to know. They want to know what's going on behind the scenes. So you have a guy who essentially has a lot of difficulty with his filter, filtering out his what he should put out into the public, and probably filtering his own feelings and his own thought processes. And we get this awesome explosive cocktail of ingredients where it's like the minute he says anything, it has to mean something else. And I think it's a bit of give and take on that part, where it's like, the fans are responsible for him to act the way he does to a degree, because look, he's a pro wrestler. He's got an ego. He likes the attention, you know, as subconsciously it might be or not, like that's something nonetheless that he craves. And Punk doing it feeds into that, and that's his fatal flaw to a degree as well, you know, where he just has trouble keeping himself out of trouble, out of these situations. He feels he has to expose things for bettering the industry, or maybe bettering, you know, whatever reasons that he feels justified in doing this, whatever. But the fans also lap it up, because we've been conditioned for years to want some of this juice, some of this dirt. And CM Punk, he's the gift that keeps on giving. I don't know if does that make sense to you?
I think you made a really good point in that, like, fans really hinge on everything he says, and that when he says something, they allow themselves to read into other things, right? This kind of stems back to the pipe bomb promo, where CM Punk's really the first person to kind of get on a WWE show and actually voice what a lot of the thoughts that a lot of the fan base was thinking at the time, which is, and he does it under the guise of a pro wrestling promo where he's mad at John Cena for getting opportunities, and he knows he's the best, and Vince McMahon doesn't know what he's doing. And those were popular sentiments amongst a certain division of the WWE fans at the time. It wasn't everyone, but it wasn't a small amount of people either. And that kind of really launched his career into super, super duper star status. And it forged this connection that he had with people. And that connection is still strong in the sense that now he is that lightning rod figure. And the fact that he is in somewhat of a similar position now, where he is very upset with the company he's in, that lightning is striking again. I think the reaction is very different because of AEW's fan base's relationship with AEW, the company, as opposed to WWE's fan base.
Yeah.
Especially during that time period. And I think that is a key point. To me, it really comes back down to fans have a really strong emotional connection with CM Punk. And that was why he was able to sell out United Center when he came back. That was why, All In, his first match back, did over 200,000 pay-per-view buys. That was why he's such a big wrestling star. And that emotional connection is also why people are just fascinated with his behavior and fascinated to find out, is he going to come back to AEW? What's his real issue with the Elite? Why did he have that meltdown at the press conference? Are we ever going to see him wrestle again? All of those questions are being asked, and there's so much interest in those potential answers because of that emotional connection that he has with some of the fans.
I'm in complete agreement. And I think that the thing that, you know, I mentioned it briefly, but I think that what especially made the gripe bomb special, well, not the gripe bomb, the pipe bomb, the gripe bomb's another thing, but the pipe bomb originally is that, you know, he was essentially, right, I mentioned it, right, the martyrdom idea. He sacrificed himself. You know, he's like, I'm putting my career on the line to say the things that we know are true, that we're all talking. Everyone knows these are the things that are true. I want you guys to know that I hear you, even though Vince doesn't, right? So, you know, in the situation where he's in today, he doesn't have a, you know, a loathed authority figure to go up against. He's not trying to scratch and crawl his way up, you know, try and break a glass ceiling for him at this point. He's absolutely not going after pro wrestlers who are being pushed as main event acts, but are at the same time reviled by the audience, right? The elite, Kenny Omega, are extremely beloved. They have a very strong grassroots base of fandom. So I think there's a lot of things that he's doing right now, which make a lot of sense in the behaviors of CM Punk, but that are backfiring because he's not the underdog this time. He's clawing from beneath. He's the top guy now. He's the superstar. He's the prodigal son coming home to AEW. You know, like he told Hangman Page during that one promo. You know, I made the roads that you walk on and so forth. I felled the trees that you built this house with. He's not entirely wrong. So, you know, I think there's a part of it, at least for me, that I find absolutely fascinating in how he's handling all of this, where it's like, brother, you're at the top of the hill. Like, you're fine where you are right now. Whatever you're trying to do it's not connecting. It's not working. And it's coming off as petty as opposed to being, you know, righteous.
Right. And like his disposition during the gripe bomb, as you alluded to, the all-in press conference from last year, his disposition wasn't that like he's the underdog, right? His disposition was he's this big important star. None of these other people, all these people around him, don't know what they're doing. The EVPs couldn't run a target. Hangman Page is an empty-headed fuck that hasn't done anything in the business. Like, it was very much the I'm a big superstar, none of these other people know what they're doing, and they all need to listen to me if they actually want to make money and run a business. And that's very different than being I'm the guy who's the most talented, but I'm not being recognized because the big corporate suits don't see me as the big star, which is originally what elevated him to a kind of superstardom level. And it's interesting, like there's a savviness to when he said what he said in WWE, because again, there was a segment of the fans that connected with that. But was that internal, I guess, was that intentional savviness? Was that CM Punk saying, I'm going to say these things because the fans will rally behind me and they'll get it and it will make me a big star? Or was he just saying that because that's how he really felt? That's what he said. I said afterwards about that promo. He said, they just told me to say what you feel. And so I said what I felt. And so I'm not so sure with the gripe bomb and the post-show presser and kind of the games that are being played right now, I'm not sure if he's using the idea of like, well, this worked for me in WWE to paint myself as this martyr, and so it's going to work for me here in AEW, as much as he's just like, I can't stand these dudes and I need to get rid of them and I need to figure out, you know, how I can move on without working with them. I don't know if he's really that concerned with like the public perception necessarily, as much as he's just going purely by instinct in his own personal feelings, as opposed to a more like galaxy brained idea of this is what's going to get me over in a pro wrestling sense.
I'm going to respectfully disagree with you on the idea that he's not worried about public opinion, because everything that has happened in wrestling media over just what 2 weeks, Jesse, at this point when we're recording this, with the Dax podcast and the accusations, him throwing people under the bus, other people throwing other people under the bus. I think he cares a lot. I think the stories that have been circulating in regards to, you know, again, like we said, we're not going to get into it and get hot about it, but just to expose the point here, where he talks about where we hear stories where, well, CM Punk would like to work with the Elite, but we haven't heard anything back, you know, that kind of stuff. I think this is deliberate, right? And I do believe that I don't disagree with you in the sense that he just wants to move these guys out of the way and he wants to do his own thing. That's, I can get behind that, but I think it's a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B, a little bit of, hey, you know, let's get rid of the Elite. Let me do my own thing on one hand, but on the other hand, you know, I do care what the public opinion thinks about me. So, and now I've been dragged through the mud. Well, now that I'm slowly starting to come back, I need to rehabilitate my image. I can't take all the blame here. I don't want to be the evil guy. Hey, by the way, I tried to reach out to the other side and they're not giving me any signs back. Who's the bad guy here? I don't know. I didn't watch Rocky III. I couldn't tell you.
Right. And I guess I'll rephrase in the sense, I 100% agree with you and what you're saying about, I think that the attempts to say, oh, I'm willing to meet with the Elite, I'm willing to work with Kenny Omega, I was just waiting for them to get back to me. They, you know, waiting for them to come to the table. I think I 100% agree with you in that. I think those moves are in an attempt to put public pressure on Tony Khan and AEW and especially the Elite to kind of meet him in a certain way. But I guess what I'm saying is I don't think Punk is doing that in a move to being like, this is going to help me get over as a wrestling. I think the pipe bomb promo, I think 100% was in some ways him doing that. But and I think that's the accepted history of it. But I do think I can look back on it and say, like, maybe he was just being an ornery asshole and it worked. Like, people really responded well to what he said back in, 2011? You know, leading up to the match at Money in the Bank. And it turned him into a star, but it wasn't really necessarily intended for him to do that. Remember, he was supposed to be a heel in that promo because he's feuding with John Cena, of course. And it just ends up turning him into a huge babyface because the sentiment, it was the right time and right place for him to kind of make that sentiment about the company. And I think, I'm pretty sure he knows, and it's probably in some ways frustrating because now he's obviously opposed them. That he knows that the AEW fan base has a much more positive outlook on Kenny Omega and Young Bucks and Hangman Page than the WWE fan base had on Vince McMahon's creative and, to an extent, John Cena. Again, we're not talking about the whole fan base, but we're talking about a large portion of the fan base that was clearly opposed to John Cena and seeing John Cena in main events and things like that. And I don't think he would have miscalculated in that. Yep, it's going to work again for me. But I just think this is, he's going by instinct and he's going by how he feels. And I don't think he's putting like a tremendous amount of thought into what kind of gamesmanship he's doing here. I think he's just kind of going at it raw. And it's probably frustrating to him that people like Dave Meltzer are basically saying that. Right. Dave is saying that, you know, Dave was the person who was like, he's saying he wants to meet with them, but he really is just trying to, you know, push them out. And I'm sure that didn't sit well with CM Punk because, you know, his plan wasn't that savvy. I don't think it's really worked. Like, do you think there are people that are sitting there right now that are maybe listening to the show or following the news? You think there's a lot of people that are like, you know what, I was on the side of the Elite, but now I can kind of see CM Punk's point because he wants to meet with them? Or do you think most people that would be invested in this can see through that trap?
I think most people are probably buying it.
Yeah.
I think there is a certain level of media literacy that just does not exist. And this is, you know, this is not just pertaining to your run-of-the-mill wrestling fan. This is like across all forms of media. all topics. You know, I think it is working to a degree. You know, there are people that I followed on Twitter and whatnot that that were very despondent, you know, in regards to stuff that happened with, you know, of course, the gripe bomb and finding out, you know, some of the details of the fight that CM Punk was most likely in the wrong, you know, something that is less and less disputed, that he that maybe he's looking too much out for himself a little too much, and they were trying to cling on to hope. Then he does the Instagram post and they're like, man, you know, then all of a sudden they get reanimated, re-energized by hearing, oh, we'll see, and Punk wants to mend bridges. It's the other guys who don't, kind of thing. I'm paraphrasing, of course. And yeah, that re-energizes the fan base. You know, like I think that, you know, I'm not trying to say that I'm smarter than anyone else, but there, you know, there is a level of media literacy that is absent in these types of situations, and that get a lot of people hot when wrestling media starts getting challenged in that regard, where it's like, hey, do you realize that this is what's happening? And then the situation always boils down to, well, tell us who your source is. Who's your source? Well, on one hand, it doesn't matter. You know, we're not going to tell you. But on the second hand, if you put one and one and one together, you can figure it out pretty easily. Like even in a situation where we could be learning something, the point that I'm trying to make here is that even in a situation where we could learn something about media literacy and how to interpret how things are reported, we're still missing the point, because now we're arguing as to who, you know, is Chris Jericho a source for the Observer? You know, that got Brian Alvarez mad as hell. Is Dax Harwood just feeding Sean Ross app, and that got people mad as hell as well? Like, we're not even focusing on the right conversation, even when it's happening right before our eyes, and we could be talking about, well, look, there are ways to understand what's happening here and how people are using their media context, and not in a bad way. They, you know, that's how it works. You know, I'm not trying to, again, not trying to discredit anyone or anything here, but how they're using their media context to get their story across.
Right. And that's something that exists in politics. It exists in sports. It exists in other forms of entertainment and pop culture. I do agree in the sense that, like, in the day after, like, if you're just scrolling through Twitter and you see a headline from, you know, e-wrestling news or any dirt sheet website, right, that just says, you know, CM Punk says try, you know, CM Punk camp report, CM Punk camp is willing to meet with Elite, most people probably aren't even clicking on that story, but they're registering the information that, oh, CM Punk wants to meet with the Elite. Let alone are they, you know, using the critical thinking power to think, why would CM Punk be saying this, or where is this information coming from? And you're totally right in that we end up having a discussion about who sources are talking to who, and why would this person report that? And it's like, well, let's get focused on the task at hand, right? It is important to figure out kind of what gamesmanship is going on behind the scenes, mm-hmm. leaking stuff and choosing to talk to people off the record or whatever. But you're right. It does take kind of the discussion away from what we're really talking about here, which is CM Punk. Like, it's fascinating to me. It's fascinating that anyone can watch the CM Punk All Out presser and think that, like, the Elite are bearing, like, a ton of responsibility in this. And that it's like, even in that, even let's say, oh, it's both sides are wrong, it's a 50-50 split. Like, it's like, to me, like, I just cannot understand that logic, because I see a guy acting incredibly unprofessional and throwing everyone under the bus in a million different ways.
And look, just really quickly, you know, we're talking about the All Out scrum, but I mean, that was just, if anything, that was a confirmation of what he's capable of doing, or how he's, how big of a chip on his shoulder he has, how he feels people are out to get him. Because technically speaking, this all started with the Hangman Page promo, where he calls out Hangman Adam Page when Page is unscripted. He's not scripted to come out, but Punk goes into business for himself, you know, to use the tired expression. But nonetheless, that's what he did. That's legitimately where it started there, where you could still have room to argue and be like, well, was it really that? Were they just doing a little thing? You know, you fast forward to August of 2022 at that point, 2022. Sorry about that. You fast forward to there, and he's doing it again. He's essentially doing the same thing. He's calling people out with no one having a chance to do the rebuttal, as opposed to doing it on live TV where there's a script and you're supposed to be entertaining and there's, you know, you follow what the Booker man tells you to do. Now he's doing it like completely freeform, full shoot. There's a correlation there. It's not just an isolated event, and you can't, and like you said, you can't just say, oh, well, I'm sure the Bucks had a lot to do with it. I think he was setting that up for a while.
Yeah, man, like, given what we know now and everything we kind of know about CM Punk's motivations, that promo where he calls out Hangman Page for no reason, like, that honestly is one of the stupidest things I have seen an individual wrestler do in the last several years. Like,
and hey, we watch pro wrestling.
Yeah.
We see a lot of wrestlers do some pretty dumb things.
Right. But as far as just an individual choice to be like, I'm going to go out and I'm going to call out another babyface wrestler who has no idea I'm going to call him out. And I don't even know if he was at the show. And it's just going to confuse every single one of our viewers. It's supposedly going to tease a feud between two baby faces that's not on the books to happen. And then Punk is walking back to the back and he's smirking, thinking he got a receipt. Like, what did he gain from that? He gained absolutely nothing. And he looked like a complete fool. And he just confused all of the viewers. And like, it was, what a dumb idea that was. It really was. Like, the presser is more damaging because he's shooting there, brother. Like, he's not in kayfabe. You know, we know those are his real words. He's not playing a character. But just the on-screen kind of just, I'm going to go out here, I'm going to call this guy out for no reason, and I'm going to think it's going to be a receipt for this thing that pretty much every single fan had completely forgotten about, like, 5 minutes after it happened, which is the Hangman Page workers' rights line. Joe Lanza made, like, a big deal. He almost turned into a bit about the workers' rights line. If he didn't do that, I wouldn't even have noticed it. Like,
the only reason I remember it is because of how much Joe focused into it. I was like, I don't understand what he was talking about. And I was like, neither did I, but I don't, doesn't seem like a big deal. But yeah, you get the 2020 vision going and you're like, okay, this all connects in some very weird way.
And if we're going to talk about, like, sides, we're talking about why this is such an interesting topic for people to talk about and want news about. The other thing is that I do think that the CM Punk situation and the CM Punk Elite real life feud, in the interest that it has, can be boiled down to all come back to the fundamental dispute that involves All Elite Wrestling, which is AEW versus WWE, or in other words, the elites in their style of wrestling versus the accepted traditional style of wrestling, which has become WWE wrestling. And a lot of people who maybe, like, I'll use myself as an example, just to kind of show, like, to try to be as transparent as possible here. Like, I am someone who naturally likes AEW wrestling and likes the elite style of wrestling and likes the Young Bucks and Kenny Omega. And they were, like, my favorite wrestlers when AEW started. And I don't really care for WWE or their style of wrestling or things like that. But I also had nothing against CM Punk. I liked CM Punk. I thought he was great. I thought his performance in AEW has been great. I liked both parties. But if I'm going to pick a side, I guess I'm siding with the Elite and Kenny Omega. Is that because I like those guys and what they represent more than I like what WWE and maybe a WWE traditional star like CM Punk represents? Maybe that is a factor, but I definitely think there's a lot of people out there that were maybe neutral on it, but because now it's like it's a chance to knock the Elite, it's a chance to knock Tony Khan, it's a chance to or vice versa, or conversely, it's a chance to bury CM Punk, this WWE star who thinks he can run the whole thing. I think people find themselves being divided along that, and that is almost every argument, every discussion you have about AEW with somebody can almost be boiled down to the what does AEW mean to the broader pro wrestling world, and is it a threat to WWE and the established order of wrestling? And I do think that this situation is just kind of another piece of that broader arguments that people have gotten themselves into, you know, even before AEW existed.
Yeah. It's interesting because, you know, it's interesting when you think about it that in this circumstance, because, you know, what you're saying, it makes a lot of sense. It's interesting that you would consider the guy who positioned himself, made his jump to superstardom as an anti WWE guy, or at least an anti corporate pro wrestling guy, right, is now the guy who is like you're coming into our environment and you're trying to change things, trying to change what we have created, what we've grown here ourselves, and you're trying to take over or whatever. It's poetic to a certain degree. It's kind of like good. It's kind of like a good novel where the irony starts getting really thick when you take a look at it that way.
Well, and I think the irony of it, right? The CM Punk, the, you know, anti-authority figure who launched himself into stardom by railing against WWE, and then publicly quitting WWE, or at least he was officially he was fired, but walking out of WWE and not wrestling for a while, and that guy is now the representation of, you know, WWE and established order in pro wrestling. Yeah. And he's banging heads with the Elite and the Young Bucks and AEW. And the irony of that is another reason why I think people are so fascinated about this, because of all the characters that have existed to be in this role, the person who is now kind of like the big star who's dismissive of AEW, who thinks he's bigger than the company, that thinks he's the biggest star in the world, is CM Punk. And that, you know, and that happens in wrestling a lot, which is the person who you would think, who came up through a certain way in the business, and did it by like breaking rules or being different, is now the person telling the same stories. Right. I always thought like there was a few years ago, Edge made some comments about, like, I don't know if it was about like the proliferation of ladder matches or just hardcore wrestling spots and style, but Edge said something like, to be a great wrestler, you know, you really shouldn't be falling off of ladders and stuff like that. You gotta, like, you know, or use weapons. Like, you gotta understand the basics and traditions of storytelling, and like kind of giving this old fart speech. And it's like, and then everyone was just like, Edge is saying these guys are doing too much, or these guys are going too fast or whatever, because Edge, of course, you know, go back 20 like, years ago.
Yeah, it's kind of like if Terry Funk were to come out and say, I wish people didn't bleed as much in pro wrestling matches, you know?
Yeah, and that there's tons and tons of examples of everyone becomes the old guy at the end of the bar grouching about how things aren't what they used to be. And we're all headed down that path to a degree. And Punk has kind of become that guy. I mean, and again, and that irony, I think, is very fascinating for people.
I think it is. It you know, and you know, it also comes, you know, if we go back and we, you know, back to the promo, the Hangman Page promo that he cut and so on and so forth. Like, I don't want to hijack your show here, Jesse. I'm just the humble guest, but can we talk about, Is this a good time? Are we ready for the Tony Khan leadership discussion? Are we ready for this? Because I think there's certain circumstances where there's certain circumstances where you have to sort of maybe not directly point the finger, but you have to sort of, you know, welcome Tony into this circle of garbage here, where he has he's had a role to play in this, as far as we know, right? Publicly, so on and so forth. Look, if it was Nick Comoroto who had hit the ring and had cut the Hangman Page promo, that dude would have been fired. I hit the bricks, pal, right? But as far as we know, CM Punk has not been, he was never reprimanded. He was, you know, not punished, not suspended. There was nothing. But CM Punk literally went out and did like one of the biggest no-nos in pro wrestling. And that is just like go against the booker's wishes and just do something on your own.
Yeah. Shoot in his own angle.
Right. So then we go to All Out, and while he's bashing VVPs and talking about, you know, managing targets and whatnot, Tony Khan is sitting next to him and he's nodding. I'm like, what is going on? Tell your guy to hit the showers, pal, regardless, you know? And I think, you know, I think this escalated to the point where it is like, look, hot-headed egos of pro wrestlers, that's fine, that's one thing, but I don't feel like any of them were reined in. And I think that behooves Tony in this situation for him to have to do so. He should have done something sooner to be like, look, this kind of stuff can't happen. I can't sit here and be the boss and give a direction for everyone in this company. And now we're hearing about the brand splits and so on and so forth. It feels like he's creating concessions as opposed to putting his foot down with a firm stance.
Right. We ultimately understand very little about.
Sure.
Like what is going on behind the closed door. But I think it's pretty indisputable to me that Tony did a bad job managing the situation last year. Now, if they're working again in 2023, he's hopefully learned from it and things are going to be different this time. But there's no doubt that Tony didn't do a good job, because if he did do a good job, we wouldn't have had the press meltdown.
No,
we probably wouldn't even have the CM Punk Hangman Page receipt promo. But as we just talked about, the warning signs were there after that Hangman Page promo that CM Punk caught. Tony should have been like, we can't have any of this. And maybe he did say that, and Punk just did his own thing, you know, and Punk, you know, did
as him far again. As we know.
That's totally possible. Because we're not seeing any of this on screen. The most we have on screen is Tony in that presser nodding along. And then towards the end of the presser, he said something like, you know, not everyone likes CM Punk, but he's a big star and he allows us to hire more people with the business that he draws in. And many people are going to be aware of that after tonight. Like, he said something like that, like basically saying that, like, not everyone has to like CM Punk, but because he's a big star, you know, that's okay.
We're going to put up with some stuff.
That's pretty much all we've seen publicly from his like leadership that we can see. But I think it's obvious from what we saw last year from CM Punk's actions and the way that clearly it's possible it's all a work, because it's always a case in wrestling, but it seems like the wounds in 2023 have not healed. Still seems like these guys can't get along. Still seems like these guys don't want to work together. And eventually, you're right, like there has to be accountability, there has to be responsibility. And I think part of it, Warren, is I think with Tony in this situation in particular, there's kind of a little bit of, I think, sympathy people will have. Not like, you know, outward sympathy, like, oh, poor Tony Khan. Oh, why does he have to deal with all these knuckleheads? Not that kind of sympathy, but at least an understanding where most people are like, why can't these two parties just be professional? Why can't CM Punk just be an adult? And if someone's going to be irrational, like Punk has behaved, there's only so much a leader can do in that sense. And that I think Tony sometimes gets like, we'll get like a pass because I think the general public sees the situation and are like, well, these wrestlers are being unreasonable, as opposed to, you know, Tony doesn't know how to manage his people.
Mm-hmm.
And there are probably, both of those statements are probably true. The wrestlers are being unreasonable and Tony could have done a better job managing his people. I think that's undisputable at this point.
And it goes to the point where people, you know, if we're circling back to previous points that you made, right? So, you know, we have to, at some point, we're hoping that throughout this all, Tony Khan has made this into a learning experience, right? Just as much as I'm assuming that Vince McMahon made a learning experience out of Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart back in the day, because God forbid, that must not have been easy to manage either. You know what
right,
I mean?
And he obviously mismanaged that situation.
Yes, absolutely.
With the Montreal Screwjob and things like that, he definitely had an abject role in mismanaging that. I don't think from a booking perspective, like, Tony has done anything wrong with, like, the CM Punk and the Elite. But it's more of just egos and understanding the hierarchy. And, I mean, I'm of the belief, and this is based just on my own kind of belief. It's not really based on any hard evidence, so I could be totally wrong. But I'm kind of the belief that, you know, the EVPs, the Young Bucks and Kenny Omega and Cody Rhodes, what they signed up for when they started the company with Tony is different than what has happened now as far as what their role is as far as management.
I'm convinced too.
Like, I think that it's probably lesser than they thought it was going to be.
I would say that it changed in January 2020.
Right. We have the Bad Dynamite, right? Which,
yeah.
I have never gone back and watched the Bad Dynamite. And it's probably not that bad is my take on it. But they had the ending where the Dark Order, had all the numbers and they beat up the Elite and fans didn't like that. And the guy was missing his punches or whatever.
And then we come back in January and then we start getting reports that Tony Khan, everything goes through Tony Khan.
He seized more control. He's more hands on. And the show got back on track and ratings improved and things like that. Mm-hmm. But I'm of the belief, as you are, that the EVPs kind of probably wield less power now than they did the very formation of the company. And maybe that doesn't sit well with them. And maybe the relationship that Tony has with them is very different than when it first started. Mm-hmm. And Tony, you know, obviously CM Punk and Tony obviously have some sort of close relationship in the sense that I think Tony values Punk's opinions very highly, just like he values the opinions of Chris Jericho and probably John Moxley or these other big stars. Realistically, you should value the opinion of these people who have been very successful in wrestling. That's mm-hmm. that's part of it. Now, you can't, where people in wrestling are selfish and they're carnies and you can't always do what they say and they're not always going to give you advice with your best interest at heart. But I do think that Tony, you know, that relationship with CM Punk, maybe that complicates things. And all of that is in play. I wanted to bring something else up in the sense of, if we wanted to get back to, like, why is CM Punk, why does he dominate the conversation so much? And something Rich Craich said a week ago is, he said, people love messy bitches. That's what he said. Warren, are you familiar? I don't know if they broadcast this in Canada, but are you familiar with the show Vanderpump Rules?
I have heard of it, but I don't know exactly what it's about. No.
Okay. Well, similar to me, I like the name sounds familiar, but I don't really know what it's about. But if you follow the Wednesday night ratings here in the good old USA, people have noticed that Vanderpump Rules over the last several weeks has been beating AEW Dynamite, not necessarily because Dynamite is down, but because Vanderpump Rules is way up. And Vanderpump Rules is a reality TV show that's been on TV for many seasons, and seems unusual that they are now, like, you know, a top three cable show on Wednesday nights. Usually it was like only the NBA would beat AEW when it comes to ratings. And, mm-hmm. and now it's like the NBA and Vanderpump Rules. Maybe the Challenge was there for a little bit. Maybe a big news story on one of the cable news networks would be there. But now it's like Vanderpump Rules is always up there. And I guess the reason Vanderpump Rules has had a big ratings boost in recent weeks is because of some sex scandal on the show. I think like one of the reality show members had sex with like the wife of another the wife that was part of a couple on the show, and there's all this relationship drama, and it's this big messy thing. And obviously people respond to that because, as Rich Craich said, people like messy bitches. And who is a bigger messy bitch than CM Punk? That's in the news around him and the drama around him. It is very similar to what you would see on a reality TV show. And it's full of insecurities, and it's full of persecution complex, and it's all being channeled through this very charismatic personality who has a devoted fan base and has a strong emotional connection with fans. And I'd be really interested to see when CM Punk comes back to AEW, and it seems like it is a matter of when, not if, when he comes back to AEW, what the response is going to be like to him. Are people going to, is he going to be a babyface? Is he going to be a heel? Will people cheer him? Will people boo him? Will he move ratings? What if he's not feuding with the Elite? Will that be weird? Will people be chanting for the Elite in all of his matches? And he's going to exist in this weird pocket universe where the Elite don't exist. It's going to be absolutely fascinating to see what kind of connection he has with the fans and what that means for business.
In the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up thinking, maybe I can pull a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card, but with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now, when I buy Slab Packs at Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. I was able to open an Arena Club Slab Pack, and I'll be honest, it was a lot better than what you normally do. Say you go to a card show, and there's a random innocuous brown bag of cards, and yeah, you can open it and look, it's going to be junk. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're probably going to get in those. Maybe you find that fun, and sometimes I do. Sometimes I like just opening up cards and saying, ah, hey, look at some random cards or whatever. But if you're really in this game to find value and find particular cards, it sucks to have to buy these mystery packs, and it ends up being, you know, almost nothing, you know, nothing of value. Not with Arena Club. You get a display, again, of all available cards, hit rates, grading. So you know that when you're opening up the slab pack, you are going to get something valuable. You are getting something good. And Arena Club, in addition to having those great slab packs we just talked about, is also a marketplace for card collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying, all that sort of stuff. But those Arena Club slab packs, man, they are revolutionizing the repack game with transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed in your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. So again, setting these things off, it's going to be officially graded by Arena Club. And the Arena Club grading process is accurate, fast, and transparent, with full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. So whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. So right now, I've got a special offer here for Voices of Wrestling Network listeners. You can get 10% off of your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Now, that's a crazy offer. That's 10% off a $400 slab pack. $40 off right there. 10% off your first purchase. No matter what that purchase is, 10% off. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase on Arena Club. And we thank them for sponsoring the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. Keyless entry, no more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second fingerprint recognition and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio. And then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They are on standby for you 24/7, so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy Video Lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages has arrived. And really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys and reach in my pocket or wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the Eufy Video Lock. I touch it. 0.3 second fingerprint recognition, 1 second. Door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
I agree. I was while you were explaining the Vanderpump Rules, I just pulled up some images on Google, and I don't even know. Like, these are, they all look like the most boring people on planet Earth. Like, I don't know. I don't even know what it's about. Anyway, CM Punk is anything but boring, and I think the crowd reaction is going to be, at this point, this is what I'm most excited for in regards to his return. I'm really excited to see how the audience is going to react for him. Look, you know, there's been speculations about, you know, there's a Chicago show coming up before Forbidden Door 2. Would they, you know, I guess if Tony wants to ensure that CM Punk gets a hero's welcome, no better place to do it than in Chicago. So as opposed to, let's say, Long Island, where, you know, that'll probably be a whole other story. But, you know, what is going to be, how it's going to be a challenge when you think about it. How will CM Punk manage to be, let me rephrase that. How will kayfabe CM Punk manage to be more interesting than shoot CM Punk, if that makes sense, right? Like, mm-hmm. How will you be able to concoct angles, you know, and keep him interesting without him, you know, blurting stuff out on an Instagram reel.
Right. And Tony's always, I think Tony's always kind of been fascinated with the idea of a work shoot. We've seen a lot of that done in mm-hmm. AEW creatively. The mm-hmm. idea that the most interesting thing AEW can do is to give people a glimpse behind the scenes and to feel like what they're seeing is real life and not fake. I don't really care about any of that. I accept that wrestling is fake, and mm-hmm. I just want to see these personalities, and I want to see quality in ring work, and I want to see promos, and I want to see stories. Like, I can accept that I'm watching a work of fiction which yeah. apparently some people still don't understand that fans are capable of doing that. and so I, again, that's another monkey wrench, because I totally get what you're saying in that, like he can't come back and just be like, oh yeah, I'm glad I recovered from my biceps or my triceps injury. I'm ready to go for the AEW world title. Like, and he's a baby face and.
Yeah, and he jumps on his leg again, you know, and he does all that, but nothing else gets addressed.
Yeah.
It's going to be extremely strange. Like, frankly, like you mentioned, and if we're being completely honest with each other, if there's not a feud with the Elite, what are we even doing? What's the point? Like, none of this will have been worth it if you're literally leaving the like, it's not even a question of it's a money match or whatnot. Like, there has to be an in-ring resolution to this, if only for PR considerations, right? Because, you know, and I mentioned this in my article that I wrote for Voices of Wrestling. By making the match, you know, whether it's whatever way you want to go about it, Kenny versus CM Punk or the Elite versus CM Punk and FTR, whatever way you want to approach it, it's a public relations victory if you put that on, because then fans will have the reassurance that things have been worked out, that, you know, everyone wins in this situation. The Elite are no longer seem to be the guys who are avoiding CM Punk at all costs. CM Punk is now, it's no longer the guy who's mad at them and never wants to work with any of them ever again, kind of thing. No, everyone wins in a scenario where there's a big blow-off match. And it's an elephant in the room now that creatively has to be addressed. It's a catch 22, because I'm, you know, on one side I'm with you, the shoot stuff and people saying, oh, you know, my contract's coming up, like, I'm sick of that, and I don't think it's a good look. So you know, the more you touch into the reality stuff, I think ultimately it hurts. But in this situation here, you cannot not address it. You cannot not make something creative out of this very real situation, because it's always just going to be the elephant in the room. It's exactly like when, you know, if you do the comparison where maybe it's just or unjust, I'll let you decide, where, you know, during the Roman Reigns' push as a babyface by Vince, the crowd was outrightly rejecting him, and that became a thing. People were just booing him. There's a Wikipedia page.
Yes, on, an article, you know, a long Wikipedia article that's just on, like, crowd reaction to Roman Reigns.
And it's not part of the Roman Reigns Wikipedia page. It has its own thing. Let's move to another page. So it becomes its own thing, but it was never really addressed, right? Because WWE just had its blinders on. It's like, nope, keep moving forward, stick to the plan. If CM Punk versus the Elite never gets addressed, it's just going to hang over everything. It's just going to remain there like a dark cloud, but nonetheless, it's just going to hang there. It has to be addressed creatively. You just cannot, like, he just can't come back and be business as usual, because it has not been business as usual since September 2022.
Yeah, I mean, Trevor Dame mentioned that on our pod a few weeks ago, where he said, you come back and you do a match or program with the Elite and CM Punk, and then everything just becomes pro wrestling. Like, the meltdown, the presser, the comments about Hangman Page, like, all that just becomes part of pro wrestling history. It doesn't become like a real existential threat to the company the way mm-hmm. that it feels like it is now. And I think I agree that it would totally renew, like, from a PR perspective, renew optimism for fans that maybe have grown cynical over AEW's inability to get these guys to work together. You know, to make people feel better that, oh, everything's back on the right track, because this huge problem that we had has been rectified, and they ended up having this match that I'm sure would do very, very well from a business perspective, and everyone made a lot of money, and now we can laugh all the way to the bank and move on with everything, even if these guys still kind of don't like each other in real life. But again, that's
fine.
That's getting, you know, and again, that's getting towards, like, we don't know what's going to happen if CM Punk comes back. We don't know if they're going to work together or not. So I don't want to spend too much more time speculating on that aspect of it. And I guess the last point I kind of want to mention here is CM Punk himself. How about this for an idea, Warren, or a statement? You tell me if you agree or disagree.
All right.
CM Punk, out of any wrestler that could possibly ever appear on a wrestling show right now, CM Punk has the deepest emotional connection of any wrestler in the world. Like, CM Punk's relationship with his fans, the CM Punk fans, especially in Chicago. And you can go back to that, his original debut in the Rampage First Dance, where people are crying when he returned to pro wrestling. Mm-hmm. Like, there are bigger stars. Like, John Cena is a bigger star than CM Punk. If John Cena showed up in AEW, I think he would do bigger business than CM Punk. But there's a emotional investment that fans have in CM Punk, in the CM Punk imagery, in the CM Punk words, in the CM Punk reputation, that is on a different level than any other active or semi-active professional wrestler. Like, even if The Rock showed up on AEW, like The Rock.
I agree with you. The Rock wouldn't be as,
like, they'd pop a bigger rating. Like, but there's something about the emotional connection that people have to CM Punk. Like, Cena's a huge star, The Rock's a huge star, but there's an inevitability to their huge superstardom that feels, like, I don't know, kind of manufactured, that fans aren't going to feel quite as attached to, as opposed to CM Punk's more organic, homegrown individualism that connects with the fans. And that's really ultimately why I think the news about him is so important, that people are so interested in what he's doing and what he's going to, if he's going to show up again, or what his opinions are on things, is because he just holds that special connection with fans. And there are other wrestlers that have it, but it's to a lesser extent. Punk is kind of in the sweet spot of being this big star that, you know, was in WWE for a long time and held the world championship and was in all these big signature matches and things like that, while also maintaining this kind of holistic connection with fans that didn't feel fake in any way.
I would say that what puts him over other wrestlers who I would argue have the same type of connection with their fans, like Kenny Omega, I think, is one of these guys who has it. I think Mercedes Moné. I'm not doing the bit. I think she's one who also has that type of connection with her fans.
She would be actually probably a pretty good comparison, where, like, if she shows up, her fans are going to have this strong the emotional connection with her, to her fan base. Now, her fan base, I believe, is smaller than CM Punk's fan base. But to your point,
that's where I think CM Punk wins in the fan base connection race, is the sheer size of his fan base. Because you know, the Moné stands are fantastic and crazy, and I personally love them. You know, Kenny has his very rabid fan base as well. But I think it's as it comes to just sheer volumes of fans. Then on top of that, you know, look, the United States ran out of ringer tees when he returned in 2021. Right, like, it's not even the pro wrestling
tees. There was like a shortage on specific t-shirts because of CM Punk shirts. This is like when Japan ran out of telegram paper because after Shohei Baba's death, people sending messages, which I don't know why people were using telegram paper in Japan in 1998, but
Well, you know, so, so the government still uses faxes, brother, these days. So what, you know, who are we to judge? But yeah, look, to the point is that I think he's got this very explosive compound, right? Where he has the connection, that very, and I agree with you, that very deep, profound connection, and the numbers. He's got them both. That's what makes him so. That's what makes the discussion so volatile, is because there's so many people out there who. And look, I was there at the United Center and seeing, you know, grown men cry, not just the guy we saw on TV. There were, you know, other people in the audience crying. There were people running in the aisles, high-fiving complete strangers.
So you know, you were at the first dance?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's very interesting. You do not live anywhere close to Chicago.
No.
Did you specifically, like, you thought, you were like, I got to see CM Punk's return.
Yes. I combined to go visit my fiance in the United States. Shout out Kristen. Went to visit her and we planned it around that at the same time. We're like, look, let's try and get tickets to go see CM Punk. And I'll also come spend a couple of weeks at your place.
Yeah. I'm trying to, does she live in Chicago?
She lives in Wisconsin.
Okay. But relatively in the scope,
relatively close, but it's not like
closer to Chicago than you.
Yes, very much so.
Yeah, I'm trying to get back into like how much time did we have before we knew like, oh, CM Punk's definitely going to be at this United Center show, and then
he was never announced.
I know he wasn't announced, but when did you like? I'm trying to think. Like, I felt like it was like in 2 weeks. We were like, oh, CM Punk's probably going to show up at this Rampage. Like, I felt like it wasn't like he had a lot of time to plan that out, and. I guess the point I'm making is that, like, are there other wrestlers who would make their return to a comp or show up in a company that you would be like, oh my God, how can I get to this venue? How can I fly to,
that's a very good point.
Chicago. That's like,
you know, to your point, if John Cena was announced for, you know, a Dynamite in Rochester. Okay. I wouldn't make the trip. You know what I mean? But the return of, you know, the return to wrestling of the prodigal son, you know, the guy who everyone felt was coming round to the promotion that he offhandedly birthed, you know, where there would not have been an AEW if there hadn't been the anti-establishment vision, anti-WWE perception of CM Punk, there would not have been an AEW. So I felt that it was a significant event where I was like, even if I'm, you know, I enjoy CM Punk, but I'm definitely not one of the people who live and breathe by him. But I felt the event was significant, historical. What are we talking about? First time back in wrestling after 7 years or so, where he said he'd never probably do it again, where he tried other stuff that didn't quite work out. And why wouldn't you be there? Why wouldn't you be there for the martyr, for, you know, I don't want to sound blasphemous here, but you know, Christ risen, right? That's essentially what it was. He came coming back to the fold where he belonged, not in WWE. He didn't belong there. He never belonged there. He belonged with the rest of us. So it was special for that.
This is a devoutly Catholic podcast, Warren Hayes. but I don't disagree with you. I remember like, I would say like I think the best moment in AEW's history, it's kind of tainted now, to be honest, but the best moment of AEW's history is CM Punk showing up on that episode of Rampage. Like,
Listen, I mean, I was at David Beckham's first match for the Real Madrid, right? In 2000 something, I don't remember, but I was there. And the first goal he scored, the stadium is like, what? I don't know, like 60, 70,000 people just screaming.
I don't know, the Bernabeu was like a 90,000 seat stadium.
Well, what, look, it's huge. I look off the top of my head. I don't look. All I knew is there was tons of people there.
You have to know the approximate attendance of all La Liga stadiums to appear on the show. So I'm just going to delete this pod right now.
So I'm sorry. It's had I known the criteria was so precise. You know, I was like, that was loud. But I promise you, I have never heard anything louder than the reaction that guy came in. When that guy came in, when they the first strum of the opening chord of Cult of Personality, the minute it hit, everyone just went bananas, and you could not hear the theme song. You could not hear the music at all. I am in the United Center with the sound system that has carried multiple concerts and so on and so forth. I couldn't hear a thing. Mm-hmm. Just people screaming and chanting and just, you know, a pure moment of bliss. And that's something that I honestly will never forget. Yeah. And despite, like you said, despite maybe feeling a little more tainted, you know, not quite as pure a moment anymore, in the moment, on the spot, being told we're getting ice cream bars. That's fantastic, dude.
Yeah, and he like, I mean, and it was such a, I'm sure, I can only imagine what it was like being in the building. But it was such, you know, he wasn't announced for the show.
No.
Like, I believe there was something before the show saying, like, there's going to be a big announcement, like, briefly before the show. I don't know if it was, like, the day before or a week before, but they said,
there's
like,
going to be a surprise.
Or something like that. And the show opens, and just like kind of unsolicited, CM Punk comes out, and everyone kind of knew, but the fact that they never announced it was really smart because it added this extra air of surprise to it. And it did a massive rating. It's the highest Rampage rating ever. Probably will be, unless, you know, they run it like our episode of Rampage halfway through the NBA finals or something like that. but it's, you know, like that was such a special, I remember I didn't watch it live. I was, I guess I don't really regret it, but I was hanging out with friends and I was,
good excuse.
I was checking my Twitter and I was kind of avoiding clips of it, but I was just seeing the reaction of people I follow on Twitter, people who are not prone to hyperbole, being like, oh my God, this is amazing. Like just seeing those tweets with no context, like, oh my God, this is amazing. Like, this is one of the greatest things I've ever seen. Like just people losing their minds on social media. And I remember just looking at all that, and I just said, like, oh, like friends, like I can't believe I'm not watching wrestling right now. And they were all like, Jesse, you nerd, like, shut up. But I remember, and I like had to like put my phone away, and I'm like, all I could think about, I got home at 1 a.m. Eastern time, and I had taped Rampage. And so like, I was like, usually I would watch Rampage kind of at my own leisure, but I'm like immediately ran home, like turned on Rampage and watched the thing. And it was just like, it was unbelievable. I remember like, I was showing it to people, like people who didn't like wrestling, which I don't really like doing that. Like, I don't be like, hey, like, I know like my friends aren't really enthusiastic about wrestling, so I'm not going to be like, hey guys, look at this awesome wrestling thing. I always think people, it's funny when people are like, this is something you could show a non-fan and they'd like it. I'm like, most people think it's really stupid. But I remember showing my friends, like, look at this. And like the, especially the shot, like they have a really good shot of a guy, like just tears streaming down his face. And it's just like, you don't have,
he wasn't alone. That's the thing.
Yeah.
We all know that guy. He made it on TV because he's the guy who made it on TV, but he was not alone.
Right.
I can attest
and
to
that.
It.
And, but like to the viewer at home, for people who don't know anything about CM Punk, they're like, oh my God, this guy. Like people, grown men are actually in tears for this guy. And it's just, it's that connection. And a lot of it has to be with like, you know, he didn't wrestle for almost a decade. Like he chose to remove himself from pro wrestling. A lot of that exists too. And that's part of the reason his return was so big. Like his return when he comes back to AEW, his return will not be that big. But just that raw emotional connection that he has with people. And I feel like I've said that a million times during this pod, but it's the only way I can really describe it. And I think it's the ultimately the real reason why he dominates wrestling news and he dominates the discussion. And even at this moment right now, you know, the Elite have this big feud with the Blackpool Combat Club going on in AEW. And it feels like secondary to like whatever new CM Punk is doing. Even in WWE, I mean, there's a lot of WWE only fans out there who probably don't really care at all about what is happening with CM Punk and AEW. But even within WWE, it seems like the number one wrestling news story right now, WWE was just sold. WWE just merged their company. Vince McMahon in a brazen power play came back and is now in power. And like this gigantic, gigantic story in WWE. And it's like, that was okay for a week. And like, oh, let's see what, oh, CM Punk posted something on Instagram or Dax Harwood said something minor on his podcast that might be alluding to something else. Like, it's such a gigantic thing in the pro wrestling fan base. And I think it all stems back to that connection that so many fans have with him. And even if you don't have a special connection with him, like I'm with you, Warren. I'm not like, I think CM Punk's a really talented performer. I think he's been involved in some of the most exciting and interesting things I've seen in pro wrestling, but I would not say CM Punk is one of my 10 favorite wrestlers of all time, or that CM Punk is someone that I'm going to like buy a bunch of merchandise of. But even though I'm not like that, because everyone, there's such a large section of the fan base does seem to have such strong opinions on him, becomes fascinating to me. And I become part of the vortex of people wanting to consume that information. And that's why we're talking about it for the second time in about a month on the show, just because it's the most fascinating thing that's going on in wrestling. And it's probably going to continue to be that way for a long time.
And I, you know, to your point about, you know, regarding the emotional connection, I think juxtaposing it to the sale of World Wrestling Entertainment, which is unquestionably the biggest news story since Vince bought WCW, right? Like there's nothing that's been bigger as far as good old fashioned news, but the emotional connection is absolutely one thing. I also think that, you know, business mergers and, you know, high level finance is something that, you know, people just look at from afar and cannot relate and just go, oh, okay, this is happening kind of thing. Despite, you know, how much you want to break it down and how fascinating it is, ultimately, it's not something that necessarily captivates the imagination versus a big time wrestling star with a very vocal, rabid fan base doing spontaneous stuff on public forums where he's, you know, he's breaking the code of silence. That is captivating. That's something that just absorbs the imagination much quicker than, you know, shareholders will now be 51% Endeavor and 49% the new company. You know, like, who cares?
It's funny. I would add, I think like Vince McMahon's resigning last year was like a bigger, more shocking story than probably the WWE merger. The WWE merger over a long period of time is going to obviously have a much bigger impact. Vince is already back in charge. So the changes caused by Vince resigning are pretty limited. The merger is, and I've thought about this, you know, obviously in WrestleNomics, we're very focused on the merger and things like that, but the merger's kind of boring. Like, you know, the same people are still in charge of WWE. There's, you know, Ari Emanuel is now overseeing the company in kind of this role that didn't exist before, someone kind of above Vince, but it doesn't, I would say that there's probably not going to be a lot of meddling on that end. It seems like they probably really trust, you know, Vince and Triple H and who else is going to be running the actual company to do things. And it's, you know, WWE is going to be maybe making more money and WWE is going to be a little bit more financially secure, all real, you know, small potatoes in the grand scheme of things. And it's just that it's just not that fascinating to really discuss as much, especially because the merger is not official yet. We're probably not going to see real significant changes for a while. So it's kind of hard to say, like, how big of an impact that merger is going to have on fans, as opposed to the and a lot of fans just don't care about who owns the company. They don't care about who's in charge of the company. But they do care about the on-screen product. And that's where CM Punk steps in, because not only is he this salacious backstage figure and everyone wants to know what his opinions are on things and who he's not getting along with and who he's trying to feud, who he's feuding with behind the scenes, but he's also this, you know, charismatic on-screen performer that fans are always going to want to see more of and always want to see. And I think that, that's a part of it. He satisfies both needs as far as he's impacting the on-screen product and he's this on-screen figure. And he's also this, you know, gossipy backstage. He's this messy bitch backstage that everyone wants information about.
I'm going to co-op that one, the messy bitch stuff.
It's Rich Craich. He's the one that coined it. So I want to give him full credit to it.
I'll cut him a check.
Came up with the tying it into the Vanderpump rules, like ratings take off. That was me. That's an original thought by me. Don't let Rich take that one.
You got it.
But that's pretty much it for today. Warren, you want to plug some things? I know you wrote an article for Voices of Wrestling kind of about CM Punk.
Yeah, just a couple of days ago, I wrote somewhat of a SWOT analysis, where I break down the strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats in regards to bringing CM Punk back into AEW or your promotion. You know, you just have to know what you're going to be dealing with at this point. So, you know, it's a bit embellished to not be a complete, boring, tedious corporate read. It's not an act, you know, it's not one of these SWOT analyses that you just slap on a PowerPoint presentation.
It's not written in LinkedIn language using a bunch of work terms that nobody actually uses in real life.
Exactly. So, go check it out. It's on voicesofwrestling.com. Otherwise, you can also follow my own podcast, the Mr. Warren Hayes Show, where every week I break down the news, review wrestling shows that I've watched, and talk about everything that's going on. I record live on Tuesdays at youtube.com/Mr. Warren Hayes. Otherwise, you can get the VOD there or on your favorite podcast application in audio format the very next day, gets thrown out there into the world. So check it out, the Mr. Warren Hayes Show. Love to have you.
Yeah, I'd love to be on the show. And I definitely would say that, like, I've recorded a few solo episodes on this podcast, and it's definitely a challenge. And I remember saying, like, you know, you're one of the people that I know that has done a lot of solo kind of shows and solo kind of audio. And it also works because you're doing YouTube live. So you've got comments and stuff feeding to you, but it's definitely its own kind of art form. I always am like, so can I really talk for like a long enough period of time on this subject without someone else to make it worthwhile? And then all of a sudden, like, I'll look at it, I'm like, oh, 55 minutes have gone by and I've just been talking nonstop. How did I do that?
It's a skill. It's a skill. You develop it. Good on you, Jesse.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Warren, for being on the show. As you can see, you can follow him on Twitter at Mr. Warren Hayes. Is that it?
Well, I have reclused myself from Twitter now.
Oh, you're not on Twitter anymore.
Well, my account is still there, but I am no longer partaking into giving Elon Musk any money from sponsorships or whatnot.
Well, good for you. I've definitely still on Twitter.
That's fine.
But I'll tell you what, I have, I don't want to sound too arrogant or too cocky here, but I think I can offer some real significant advice to people on how to handle social media, and it largely stems from me deleting the Twitter app from my phone, which.
Yeah. Yeah. I had seen you talk about that. I don't remember where, but you had said like, it helps you like greatly, especially over the weekends, just not having it on your phone.
Right. So I don't have Discord on my phone either, which helps a lot because otherwise I'd probably be on Discord all the time. But I just deleted the Twitter app from my phone, and it's really helped, like, just getting away from Twitter and just spending time scrolling endlessly for no reason, because I'm bored or I'm killing some time or there's commercials on television that I'm watching. And I just, it's so unproductive. And it's not just unproductive, but it's also just like wasteful and useless. And I've really evolved into just, I tweet my own stuff out. And that's pretty much it. I do very little scrolling on Twitter.
Good for you.
Anymore.
I think that's how you should use it. I agree.
Right. And like, I had a tweet last week that was not very popular. I was getting dragged in the QTs. And I said, like, I didn't really look at any of those because, like, I was like, I don't have it on my phone, so I'm not looking at it. And I'm out living my life. And it's like, I definitely have other things on my phone I look at all the time for no reason. I check my email 4 million times a day. There's just rarely do I have something worth responding to immediately. I check my fantasy sports teams all the time on my phone. I'm still like pretty much addicted to my phone, but I'm definitely gotten away from just like actually having like opening myself up to any negative interaction on Twitter. I'm all for people positively talking to me or wanting to have a constructive conversation, but it's very clear from most interactions that are negative that someone is not going to have a positive interaction with you. And I really deleted Twitter when the Elon stuff started taking off just because I didn't want to be on it all the time, but I haven't fully kicked it. I don't know if I will. I do also think I'm still at the phase of my popularity curve where Twitter helps, but
sure,
but it's probably getting, and you're probably already there in the sense of like, am I going to really be able to swing more people to my stuff on Twitter? Or have you reached your, because realistically, I think like for my very specific thoughts on pro wrestling, I probably have an audience of maybe like 10,000 people in the entire world. Like it's a pretty small, maybe it's bigger than that, but it's a pretty small number of like hardcore fans in a niche that are going to vibe with me. And like, there's just like, I'm not going to cater towards a wider audience than that for the most part.
Sure.
So why do I need to have my thoughts blasted out to the masses? Why do I need 150,000 people looking at my tweet? Because I know most of them are either not going to agree with what I say or just don't care at all.
There you go. How many KYS quote tweets do you need in a day? You know, that's pretty much it.
I need quote tweets of people either saying this in all caps with an exclamation point, or I need quote tweets of people saying SMH exclamation point. Those are the only quote tweet worth. I will say the best insult on Twitter anyone can do is
touch grass, right?
Rich Kreitch is on vacation on he's at Mount Zion, or he's at Zion National Park in Utah. And I was telling him, I was like, Rich, please, I'm begging you, please touch grass. Please touch grass. And he's like, well, it's a desert, so there's not a lot of grass. So
damn it.
He can't. But the best insult you can do on Twitter, I think, is people add you to lists. People get added to, you get a notification where it's like someone added you to a list. And most of the time it's like added you to a list and it's like wrestling or something like that. I don't really understand them. I don't make them myself, but it seems to be like people kind of making separate Twitter feeds within Twitter for just certain topics or whatever. Yeah. But the best insult I've ever gotten on Twitter is someone like added me to a list. And the list is just like people who are stupid as fuck. And so you get the notification. It's like, you know, like John Smith has added you to a list, and then it tells you what the list is. It's just people who are stupid as fuck. And you get like a separate notification for that because it's not like someone replying to you or someone liking a tweet or something like that.
There's nothing you can do. You can't respond. You just sit there and take it. That's all.
And that stuff makes me laugh. Like I don't have a problem with that at all. If you want to be on troll, I guess now I'm giving out Twitter troll advice, which is not how I want. I was previously giving out advice on how to not be addicted to Twitter, doing the opposite now.
A little bit of both. There you go. Yeah. I really liked Tay Mello's response to a troll the other day, which says, you know, leave me alone, go wash some dishes, which I thought was fantastic. Just go wash some dishes. I thought that was great.
Yeah,
that's I've used in real life actually recently.
I couldn't imagine like being an actual famous person on Twitter.
No.
And like being a woman too, like God bless them. Like I like and I guess like I like like if I was Tame Mello, I couldn't possibly be looking at my mentions. I'd be terrified of them for a number of reasons.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a reason I'm not a celebrity, and that's probably one of them.
There you go.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Warren. Thanks to everyone who's been listening. Obviously, listening to the show on YouTube, you can, of course, get it on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. It will be out on pretty much any podcast server you use. It could be on Spotify. It could be on Apple Podcasts. It could be on Amazon Podcasts, which I'm told people get their podcasts on. I did not know that. It was a service until Rich made me make an account. I don't think I've given a public shout out to Jeremy Sexton, who did the logo for this show. He did an excellent job coming up with the logo as part of kind of the branding of putting myself on the Voices of Wrestling Network. And I want to give a shout out to Jeremy, who did a really excellent job taking my jarbled suggestion of something like the guy who's in the New Yorker, but he's wrestling, and turning it into an actual good piece of artwork. So shout out to Jeremy, shout out to all my listeners, and obviously thank you, Warren. And I'll talk to everyone again in a little while.
Cheering at pro wrestling shows in Japan is back, and 2023 is already shaping up to be a big year in the history of pro res. That's why you should listen to the Emerald Flow Show. From the Royal Road to the Green Mat, Paul and Gerard take you into the world of All Japan Pro Wrestling and Pro Wrestling NOAH. Not only do we analyze events, but we examine business, who is getting over, what angles are working or not. Occasionally, we take a look at other Japanese promotions like DDT and Zero One. So if you're looking for more coverage of the world of Japanese wrestling, check out the Emerald Flow Show on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network, available on all of your favorite podcast apps.